The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network. www.theflypod.com.
FlyPod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Hi, welcome to Cover to Cover. I'm Mark DeWitt. I have the author of The Dark Side of the Mountain, Bonnie S. Johnston. Bonnie, welcome.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
All right, The Dark Side of the Mountain, this goes way back, to the, well, it was before the United States was even considered, is that correct?
That's right. During the French and Indian War, which is a portion of history that a lot of people have forgotten about.
Now, how come they have forgotten about a war such as this?
Well, I suspect it's because we were not a country yet. And also, I think that it is rarely taught in schools these days. Usually, history starts with the Revolution or sometimes even the Civil War these days.
Why is that? I mean, when I was in school, we learned about all the wars, all the battles.
I don't know. I think perhaps one reason is that there is so much history now that it's very difficult to cover 300 or 400 years of history of this continent in a year in school. So I think they cut it off.
In The Dark Side of the Mountain, we find ourselves in Germany. Now, we're a little ways from the States, the New World. How did we end up here when we're in Germany?
Well, at that time, in the early 1700s, the Germans in particular, Germany was not a country then. The area of, Germany was made up of provinces or like Saxony and that sort of thing. And the people were extremely poor and extremely mistreated by their leaders, various dukes and that sort of thing. So when the settlement in the New World became possible, many, many poor farmers in particular decided to sell everything they had and book passage for the New World, Pennsylvania in particular, because that offered an opportunity for the Germans in particular.
So we have people coming over from England, Spain, France, Germany. Was that the big influx at the time?
Yes, at various times, various areas came sort of in mass. The 1700s was provided a huge impetus for German immigration.
You know, it's not like today where you can just hop on a plane, you can go back and see your family. Who do we have coming over, and do they... You know, what's it like being away from their family and perhaps knowing you'll never see them again?
Well, in most cases, they never did see their families again once they arrived here. But a great many of the people who came did come in large family groups, brothers, wives, and children, and so forth. Probably, in a lot of cases, older parents remained in the old country, but there were a great many groups of sisters and brothers and cousins and so forth who came.
Well, introduce us to the characters in this book that came from the provinces, which would become Germany, to the New World.
Well, the main family that I've written about came from Germany in 1749. At that time, it was a couple, a man by the name of Michael Mallow and his pregnant wife. Later, they would be followed by his brother and some other members of the family. But at that time, the young couple arrived in Philadelphia and followed other German families, probably some of whom they had known before, to the colony of Pennsylvania, which offered land grants, settlement for these German immigrants.
The Dark Side of the Mountain, not your first book. You like the historical fiction. What was it like? Because I'm sure that you've done research on what it might be like to come from the provinces where Germany is today to Pennsylvania, I mean, what was it like? You just got off the boat and you were already just looking for a place to live?
Well, it was much more difficult than that, of course. But the I write a little bit in the book about what the voyage was like. And the voyage, by present-day standards, was terribly difficult. Many people died. Food was very poor and bug-infested. And when these immigrants arrived in Philadelphia, they were often mistreated by the British authorities. The British, of course, welcomed immigrants, but they also were aware of things like disease and so forth. So they very carefully screened most of these immigrants. And then they had to, before they were even allowed to get off the ship, they had to make sure their passage was paid. A lot of them couldn't do that when they finally got here for various reasons, because they had to buy extra food while they were on board ship, that sort of thing. So that's where the term indentured comes into play. A great many of these families found it necessary to indenture a child or two, which simply meant that they contracted the labor of that child for a period of years. And in that way, they secured passage money and they were able to get off the ship. And then, of course, they had to hire wagons to take them to Pennsylvania. Most of them did not speak English, so they had a language problem right away. They basically had no idea what they were getting into, and only the strong ones survived and did well. Many did go back to the old country because they simply couldn't handle the stress of the new world.
You know, like Michael, now he goes out and he finds a place to settle down. Something in an area like that, he'd probably have to cut down a lot of trees, even to make the land able to produce fruits or vegetables.
Correct. And he had, it's really hard to imagine, even as much as I've read about it, it's hard to imagine how one man would be able to clear acres and acres for not only a cabin, but also a barn and for planting purposes. In most of those cases, I think they worked as groups. The neighbors would get together and they'd spend as long as it took to erect a cabin for a new settler and so forth. So I think it was a community effort, because a single man alone would have taken years, to complete these tasks.
Well, it almost sounds like the Amish community.
I suppose so, yes. Yeah.
So the Delaware Indians, I mean, out of all the groups of indigenous people, why the Delaware?
The Delaware Indians were originally, well, the state of Delaware, of course, is named after them, and they were originally Eastern Indians. And the Iroquois chased them out of their homeland, so to speak, and pushed them further west. And by the time these Pennsylvania settlers got to, it would be Berks County, Pennsylvania, the Delaware had long been pushed west. Well, they were, of course, naturally very upset at it. And at that time, they began to align themselves with the French. And the whole story of the conflict between the British and the French at that time is way too long to go into. And I didn't go into the details in the book either. But basically, you had the French traders who wanted the freedom of this country. They didn't like the British rule. And the British, on the other hand, wanted to expand their boundaries as far as they could. So conflict was inevitable, and the Indians were more or less caught in between.
So we have an Indian chief, Kilbuck. Tell me about him.
Well, Kilbuck really lived, and you can find out more about him in Alan Eckert's books. He wrote a great many books about that particular historical period. There are places in Ohio named Kilbuck. There's a Kilbuck Creek. In Pennsylvania, there's a Kilbuck Township, and they are all named for that family. He was an actual war chief, and he is credited with numerous raids, very brutal raids, in his, I would say, his quest to save his people. Of course, he was not successful, but he certainly did everything he could for the majority of his life. And one interesting thing about him is that his sons, who also carried the name Kilbuck, were educated by the Americans after the Revolutionary War. And I believe one of them went to Dartmouth, which favored Indians at the time.
Now, in your book, The Dark Side of the Mountain, Bonnie, you talk about the Ohio River Valley, and that's where the Delaware Indians actually resided at the time?
Yes, they did, with a great many other tribes, including the Shawnee and the Miami, which people today are most familiar with, I think.
Michael and his wife, now, his wife kind of likes where they're at in Pennsylvania. He wants to go to another promised land, maybe a land where they'll have more, crops will grow better, everything is, you know, he just wants to go there so bad, him and his wife pack up, they go. Now, Virginia, a little more hillier maybe than Pennsylvania?
Absolutely, and I traced the route physically. My husband and I drove from Pennsylvania down to the fort where the massacre takes place on the frontier of Virginia, and then back up towards Pittsburgh, which is where the captives were taken. And in doing so, it became obvious to me that land speculators must have created, I won't say a myth, but an ideal scenario for these Pennsylvania settlers, because the fact is they enticed hundreds of German families to move to the frontier of Virginia. And Virginia is, that part of Virginia is beautiful, but it certainly is not conducive to farmland. And I think once they sold everything and made the move, which took weeks, there was simply no going back. It wasn't like today where you could get in a car and move back.
I think Michael and his family had, the way it sounds, maybe a better house. Were they growing different crops? I mean, when I think of Virginia, I think of tobacco.
No, at that point in time, these early settlers did not grow tobacco. Now, eventually, they probably did, or their descendants may have. But on the frontier, especially where the Mallows moved, they probably just grew enough crops to maintain their family. And, of course, in those days, they hunted for meat. It was basically a barter kind of system rather than a moneyed system. So there wasn't the need to sell crops, that kind of thing. They just made enough, eked out enough for their own survival.
Tell me a little bit about the family. They moved to Virginia. Now, they really don't like the Indians. They're half-dressed anyway. They don't have a shirt on usually. That was mentioned in the book. And now they're on the warpath. When you're living in a community like that, what's that feeling? I know in your book, The Dark Side of the Mountain, you've really brought that to life.
Well, I think it's very difficult to imagine what it must have been like, but it was strictly a matter of survival. And when the Mallows first moved to the frontier of Virginia, the French and Indian War had not yet begun. So there wasn't the fear of the Indian raiding parties at that time. But I believe in 1754, when the official French and Indian War began, then the raiding parties picked on the frontier, not just of Virginia, but also of Pennsylvania and Maryland. And there were probably thousands of settlers who were killed by these Indian raids, and many people left their cabins and moved back east to friends or relatives, at least for several years, till the conflict ended. But it is hard to imagine the fear that you would have, especially with a large family and being isolated in a cabin.
Now, you have other books also, Bonnie, and they are historical fictions. Tell me what books you have out and available.
Well, briefly, I have studied history and genealogy for decades. When I found very little interest in my family on this kind of information, I decided there might be a better way to approach it.
It's kind of hard to sell a book to all your family if you didn't have that many family, right?
That's true. At any rate, I decided to put the stories of these people in a format that might be more enjoyable to read. And, of course, the historical novel format is an obvious one for this. This book, The Dark Side of the Mountain, and a second one called Maggie, which takes place about the same period of time, both deal with real people and real events. But as you can do in historical fiction, you fill in the blanks, so to speak. And then more recently, I have taken information on various families that settled the country in the 1600s, actually, and have put those narratives out there as ebooks. There's more of a limited audience, of course, for those, but they are, in fact, historical accounts of early families.
You know, The Dark Side of the Mountain and your other book with Mary, you'd mentioned, and I've heard this before, that, you know, a historical fiction, you can write a historical novel, but you really don't know everything that happened, so you have to fill in the blanks. With writing a book like a historical fiction, you already have a cast of characters. Is that easier to do than maybe a book, a novel that you have to create your own characters?
In some ways it may be, because you already have a plot, so to speak. But in other ways, it's becomes very difficult. For example, it requires you to think about these people and what they wore and what they had to eat, what they might have known at a certain period of time. And I found that as difficult as anything in writing, because it did require a lot of research.
So what was the style back in the early 1700s, especially out in Virginia or Pennsylvania?
The style of dress? I would say it was whatever you could make yourself, because the men primarily dressed in tanned deerskin. The women spun their clothes with whatever they happened to have. So those gowns were known as homespun dresses, so to speak. Basically, you know, it was very primitive, and a woman would not have had more than probably two or three at the most outfits to wear, totally unlike today.
Now, Michael's wife outside, she was watching the kids out by her garden. It was so hot. You mentioned she lifted her skirt up to right about her knees just to get a little air. So I'm sure these clothes were thick and long.
Thick and long, and I'm sure they were very uncomfortable in hot weather, but they also served the purpose of protecting from mosquito bites and sticks and that kind of thing. I doubt that it ever occurred to women at that time to expose even their lower legs, because of the, you know, the dress, the long dress, in essence, protected them.
So with The Dark Side of the Mountain, what was the biggest challenge in this particular book, maybe that you didn't have in previous books?
Well, I would say the biggest challenge was the last portion of the book, where I had to fill in a lot of blanks. It is known that Mrs. Mallow was held by the French as a captive, probably in Montreal. She was there for several years before she was released, and no one is absolutely sure when she did go back to Virginia. So there were a lot of blanks to fill in at that time. So I based what I wrote on other stories of other captives, the history of Montreal at that time period.
If you were a captive with the Indians, with the French, what would a person expect?
Well, I think if you were a captive with the Indians, the Indians basically did not harm the women that they captured. There was a lot of fear that they would, but they basically respected the women, at least while they were transporting them to a village or to the French to sell. The French, on the other hand, you know, there are numerous stories. A lot of French took their slaves as wives eventually. So who knows exactly, but I'm sure the fear was always there if you were a woman. And I suspect if you were captured by the French traders operated as a slave, that you probably were in some kind of danger.
The Indians, the Delaware Indians in your book, The Dark Side of the Mountain, talks about the Indians coming in and gathering up kids, the white kids, and taking them back. So is that pretty much increasing their population?
That's exactly why they did it. They captured as many as they could, and these captives substituted for lost family members. And at that time, diseases were very prevalent. And so if not by means of war, a lot of Indians died due to disease. So there was always room for somebody's brother or sister or daughter or son, and that's exactly what they did. Indians notoriously had small families. I'm not sure why that was, except their lifestyle required them to do a lot of moving, and warriors were gone a lot, so they did not come close to having the number of children that white families had.
So when they would go into these villages to steal children. Were the children young enough then they didn't realize that as they grew up that they were not with the family now that they're with?
Probably most of the white captives were aware that they were not Indian, but surprisingly, maybe to us today, many of them preferred the Indian lifestyle. And there are many stories out there of captives who chose to remain with their Indian families rather than be reunited with their white families.
Yeah, back in the 70s, I mean, here you have the Hearst girl who apparently she robbed a bank because she was kidnapped by these people. And I guess that when you're with people such as that, maybe you see a different side of what you were taught as a family, and that you can really, she kind of liked where she was at the point, I guess.
Yeah, there is a name for that. Is that the Stockholm Syndrome, I think? So I suppose there are those that believe that did happen to many white captives. And there was a time in 1764 when one of the American colonels required all the Indians to turn in their white captives. There are stories available that talk about how many ran away. Many refused to go back with their families. There was much crying and lamenting the loss of Indian life. So I suppose it depended on age, maybe, and how many years the white had been a part of an Indian family.
You know, I hear a lot about the Sioux Indians, Navajo Indians, Delaware Indians, not so much. Oh, the Cleveland Indians sometimes are big. But whatever happened to the Delaware Indians?
Well, I don't know their numbers today. There is a Delaware reservation. I believe it's in Oklahoma. Anyway, there is what is called a Delaware Remnant Band, which is, I think, a loose group of people with Delaware heritage. But unfortunately, a lot of these tribes have kind of disappeared into history for various reasons. A lot of Delawares, I think, became absorbed into the white community eventually.
And that's a little different than a lot of, or some Indians, like the Sioux and the Navajo, huh?
I think so. I really am not sure. I don't even know if they have statistics on how that works. But as time goes on, I think there are fewer and fewer Indians on reservations, and more and more, at least the ones that manage to get educated and so forth, become absorbed into the rest of the world.
Dark Side of the Mountain. Now, this, of course, out right now. Are you working on another book?
Well, right now I'm doing trying to put out these narratives. And I suppose as long as I keep going through all my genealogical material, I will find more stories that I can tell.
You're going to stick with the historical fiction?
Yes, I think so. I think so.
Well, The Dark Side of the Mountain, man, that's a good read. I'm telling you that much. If I wanted more information on this, do you happen to have a website?
Yes, I do. It's my name, Bonnie S. Johnston, all one word, .com. And I have information about the books and material on that website.
All right. The Dark Side of the Mountain. Who was your favorite character in this book?
I guess I would have to say that the woman, the heroine, so to speak, Anna, is my favorite. It was hard to imagine what she went through.
Oh, no doubt. And here, 5 kids later, 30-some years old, in the book, she says when she passed a little mirror that she still looked good, but the 5 children did take their toll,
right, I'm sure.
just like today. Well, the name of the book is The Dark Side of the Mountain by Bonnie S. Johnston. Hey, check it out. Check out that website. Real good read. It's going to take you back to the early 1700s, the time of Indians, people coming over from the New World and trying to create a United States. Bonnie, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Been listening to Cover to Cover. I've been your host, Mark DeWitt, along with Bonnie S. Johnston.
To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.